Welcome to Garbage of the Five Rings, a podcast where even we aren't sure what's happening anymore. I'm one of your hosts, Amelia Antrim, and in this episode, my co-host Jude Vase and I, much like the writers of L5R, suddenly remember there's monks in Rokugan.
What?
There are! Hey, remember Shinsei?
No.
You don't, because we haven't talked about him.
Which is not surprising, because nobody knows about Shinsei at this point. Shinsei is a name on a card here and there in the flavor text, maybe, but he's important, didn't you know?
Also, maybe he was the one that originally made the Black Scrolls.
Yeah, I mean...
But we change our minds on that later. Don't worry about it. Shinsei, he's important. You should know who he is. Have we told you? No, absolutely not. But you should still know.
Yeah.
Welcome to L5R.
Meanwhile, tangential to that... Yogo Junzo, haven't checked in on him in a while. What's he been up to? Manicure? Pedicure?
Date with an Oni?
Jesus. Date with an Oni? We're going to find out.
On that Shadowlands beach.
Yeah. Yeah. It turns out he's been hunting monks, as one does.
Ishikawa, we talked about him a little bit in our episode where we talked about the Kolot, but now we're going to learn more about him. He returns from his pointless journey and accidentally discovers more stuff. That's what he does.
Yeah.
He just like trips into scenes.
Be nice. I like Ishikawa.
I'm not saying I don't. I'm just saying that like every scene that he's in, he just like tripped into it.
That's true.
Once he's there, he's fine. It's just like, hello, Ishikawa is here.
We're going to talk... We're going to tell you something stupid about the crab and lion.
Our two favorite clans.
You need to sound way more sarcastic when you say that.
Our two favorite clans.
There you go.
And then the mantis. We haven't talked about them much. We've mentioned them briefly, that Yoritomo is like doing stuff, and then there was that whole thing about whether they did or did not know about boats.
Yeah. We haven't talked about them much because they haven't done much. Up to this point, they have been some cards. That's about it.
So. They've been some cards. Wow. This episode is a lot of things that... This is a lot of, like, plot threads where the writers were like, oh, shit! We gotta tie up some loose ends. That's what we should title this episode, is just, like, loose ends.
We're in the home stretch here. Our next episodes are going to be... the Day of Thunder and the events immediately preceding it. So we're setting the scene and getting things together. So this is all the various and sundry events that haven't been finished up getting cleaned up.
Together.
In the loosest L5R sense of that word.
Yeah. So let's start with Shinsei. Because I think that this... When you talk about, like, when we talk about tying up loose ends and, like, wrapping things up, now, obviously, is the perfect time to introduce an entirely other important character that we haven't mentioned at all.
Who is, yeah, critical for the plot, too. Just like...
Right. We talked a little bit about that there's all these, like, quotes of flavor text on the bottom of cards, but other than that, we know next to nothing about Shinsei. So I think that that's probably the place that we need to start, is to talk about who the fuck is Shinsei?
Yeah. I like that he's on these cards, but it, like, so is, like, Confucius.
And like, exactly.
The I Ching and, like, the Book of the Five Rings. Like, back in the Clan Wars, like, they were not particular about what shit they would put on cards, and it was certainly they would put stuff like actual Japanese quotes and Chinese quotes on the cards, along with like the made up pseudo Asian drivel that the writers came up with, and then they would put like this Tao of Shinsei stuff on it. So there was no sense that the Tao of Shinsei stuff was important at all immediately in the early days, until they started making the Brotherhood of Shinsei more important as a faction.
Yeah, they all of a sudden just decided, like, hey, all these quotes, like, they probably should be from somebody, or, like, maybe we should explain what this is. It's, I guess, the Tao of Shinsei is mentioned sort of in passing a lot in, I think, the early fictions and in a lot of the RPG supplements, but it takes a while to get any kind of information on. It's like a year into the game before you get any kind of information on, like, who the fuck this dude is. So he is basically this, like, philosopher, I guess. He's just, like, this really smart dude wandering around, and nobody really knows who he is, but everybody listens to him.
Yeah.
Like, it depends, they don't explain his story very much.
Yeah, the early, the Clan Wars era stuff is super vague on who or what he is. Later on, they get more, they give a little more detail on him. Imperial Histories and...
But here's the thing is that even in Imperial Histories, they don't fully explain. And I guess Imperial Histories sort of has like this unreliable narrator to a degree.
Yeah, but they...
And we talked a little bit about like the difference between the RPG and the card game. But in there, it even says like he was a mortal man and then maybe not. And also, I don't know, you decide.
But they at least give some... They say... They give some like sense of history of like... who he was and how he came to Hantai and how they had this long debate and how long conversation and how the contents of that conversation were written down, and that's what became the Tao of Shinsei. Early on, there was no that wasn't a thing that existed. You were just like, there's a guy, he's Shinsei, there's some monks that follow him, there's a Tao, ba-da-ba-ch. But then over the course of the much time, we get more about him as, obviously, as time goes on, they expand on him. So by the end, the RPG supplements have built up a little more about him. But in this early stage, we have a stronghold called the Brotherhood of Shinsei, and we have some truly wild monk artwork to go along with it, and that's about it.
Yeah. So I guess my big question here is, why on earth was this the time to expand on that? That's what I want to know, is like, why?
Well, I think I can, I'm staring at our outline, and I think the answer is 1, 2, 3 bullet points down the list. And that's...
Is it though?
Well, okay, fair point. This is sort of a chicken egg thing. The hooded Ronin is the item I'm referencing, and this is the descendant of Shinsei, the last descendant of Shinsei, who shows up to herald the next day of thunder. And he basically plays Shinsei all over again, shepherding the thunders into their fate. But it's like, was that necessary? Where did this come from? Shinsei's whole role and his descendant's whole role, the whole thing is kind of hand-wavy.
I mean, it's like he's not even really like the quest giver, right? Because you already have Yokuni wandering around doing that.
Yeah, and his involvement is very much late stage. So even where he does get involved in it, like in some versions, like we were talking about in the last episode, where in some versions of the story he gives the Jade Hand to Yakumo.
And there's some versions where he's the one that saves Hattori from his egging.
Yeah. But with other thunders, he's completely uninvolved. I'm sure Kachiko couldn't have picked him out of a crowd. Same with Tatori. There's no reference that he was involved in either of those. So it's very weird. It doesn't feel like he was considered to be central to the thunder, the second day of thunder plot until later on. And then
his involvement feels really unearned.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. I don't know if the first, the OG Shinsei was always central to the first day of thunder, but I'm sure that the hooded Ronin was not always central to the second day of thunder.
But this is the first stuff.
Yeah. No, I'm saying as they were writing it, as they were conceiving it and putting it together, I think the concept of the hooded Ronin came real late in the game.
But I'm saying that, like, the concept of Shinsei being super involved in the first day of thunder hadn't happened yet. Because nothing had happened yet.
Well, but they had already, when they were putting together the storyline. They had already told the story of the first Day of Thunder in the fiction at this point. They had like made reference to that. So while I'm granting that they may have included Shinsei in that story to this point. So like I said, I'm not saying one way or the other that Shinsei was or was not conceived of as being a part of that story. I'm sure that the Hooded Ronin wasn't a part of the second Day of Thunder.
So how did he get in there?
If I had to guess.
I would love your guesses because I've got nothing.
My guess is that either the players really liked the Brotherhood of Shinsei faction or the developers really liked it. And it just kind of was one of those organic things where they introduced something kind of ad hoc and it took off and got real popular. And so they were like, well, let's make this more important. Let's wedge this more firmly into the story. That article we talked about last episode, a couple episodes ago.
Yeah.
That blessed, informative article. cursed article.
Oh, God.
Really.
Vindication.
Yeah, really. The vindicating article. It really reinforced that point to me that a lot of what they were doing was very much.
Because we feel like it.
Yeah, because we feel like it, but also like, if it feels good, go with it. So they were like, well, if this looks cool, let's make more of it, you know? And if it seems to be working, let's run with it. So I would not at all be surprised if the answer to your question is, everyone loves monks. Developers love monks. People are playing the monks. They seem to be liking the monks. Let's add more monks. Let's make this monk guy more important.
Yeah, I think my frustration just comes from like, this is not the time, as you're wrapping up a story arc, to introduce a new and critical character and then like not give a lot of background or a lot of like, you have not, again, it feels unwarranted, it feels unearned, like you have not given the required amount of background for me to care about this person at all. But I think maybe that like I'm coming from a much more narrative standpoint of like, you know, yeah. I want to care about these characters, and people are like, this is a good card.
I'm not going to advise you to put away your indignation at a lack of narrative coherence, because that's not what we do here. But I am going to say that you're
in for a long road, friend.
In for a long road, friend. It's going to get better a little bit, because over time, once we get out of this early stage and we get into gold, we get to a point where the same characters are around for a really long time, and they do start building story. But through Scorpion Clan coup here, it's a little rough. So
I mean, that's part of it too, is that like this really is the beginning, so we haven't had time to get to know any of these characters. But also, like, I don't, they could have tried.
Yeah. Well, I feel like I very much feel the longer we do this, and that article, we've teased that article a lot, but it really, I'm actually very, very grateful that article was printed when it was, because it really did confirm so much of what we suspected. But it really was a bunch of guys doing stuff on a shoestring budget, like banging stuff out as fast as they could. And narrative coherence was very clearly not high on their list of priorities at this earliest stage. So my first inclination there in that sentence was to say that John Wick was the only one who gave even any fucks about storyline. But I don't even think he was there, because you had these quotes about this guy saying, well, we had a piece of art and I would just say, this looks like a ninja. And so we'd make up a ninja faction. Like, I really think they were just making stuff as fast as they possibly could. And the idea of the story lasting beyond one set, they hadn't even thought that it was going to turn into what it did. And I think we've been real hard on them to this point. And that's fair, because the story's bonkers and bad in a lot of places. But we have to give them the slightest bit of benefit of the doubt, and that they weren't thinking about having a long-term coherent story entirely at this stage. They were just cranking shit out.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't think like anybody in the best of situations could have been like, okay, let's make careful decisions because this is going to last 20 years. Like, no, that's, I mean, yeah. So maybe we are being a little bit hard on it, but also like, that's what we're here to do.
So there's places where I'm willing to be a little easier on them. This one feels particularly dumb. Like, introducing a character late in the game, I'm not entirely sure I understand the point there either way, in any case, but...
I think maybe that's my frustration with this one, is that it's not only that you've introduced him so late, it's that I don't understand what the purpose of him is either. So if he had come in at this critical moment and played like this very important role in the situation, I think maybe we could have felt a little bit differently about this, but I don't know that he's playing a role that was necessary or that wasn't already kind of being filled in other ways.
Yeah, where's his MacGuffin? Where's his information that was desperately needed to make the Day of Thunder happen? He's got a bird and a hat. That's what he's got. And a name.
I mean, in a family line.
Yeah.
And I think it feels like the writers were like, oh, it'd be really cool because we want this to parallel. You know, we want everybody to have their...
Yeah. We got a dragon. We got a scorpion. We got a beige-ass lion. And now we got a shinsei. Yeah.
Yep.
All right.
So well. Maybe we should like talk about who he actually is now that we're done shitting on the story. So this hooded Ronin, he shows up a couple places. We talked about there's, you know, always in like vague rumors of things that he might have been the one who saved Hattori. He might have been the one that brought Yakumo this jade hand. We know that he is the last descendant of Shinsei. He was raised by monks in this village and was sort of taught the teachings of Shinsei. And then the year the coup happened, some monks from the Brotherhood of Shinsei finally decide to tell him who he is. And then he runs away to the Dragonlands to chat with Togashi. So again, that's what he's, you know, he's up there talking with Yokuni, who again, back to my point, is the one that already is our grand quest giver here. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm uninspired, I would say.
Yeah. And to sort of segue into our next section, they want to make you think he's important because in the next section here, we're going to see Yogo Junzo tearing up the countryside, burning down temples, trying to find him. But it's not clear, other than being Shinsei's descendant, what his value is.
And I don't think we ever really find that out.
Nope.
That's never really answered because, again, all of the things that he's doing are already being done elsewhere.
Yeah. So there's a quote.
Yes. Let's move into our next section here.
Yeah. So the next section, there's a quote from one of the sort of timeline summaries in which it says, Yogo Junzo receives new commands from his master, Fu Lang. Not real sure who that is. He is to begin destroying the monasteries of the Shintao, the Brotherhood of Shinsei. His mission is to find the descendant of Shinsei and kill him before he can reunite the Seven Thunders. So ostensibly, his mission is to reunite the Seven Thunders. But it's never clear to me how he is the one that does that.
I mean, other than these little things, so maybe... I mean, because we talked about these little roles that he has. He's the one that supposedly saves Hattori. He's the one that gives Yakumo the jade hand. Maybe, because all of those are rumors. But, like, those are little things that I guess would sort of ensure that it happens as it's supposed to happen. But we don't get enough information to ever feel confident about that. Yeah. I mean, 20 years in and we still don't have that. It's not like, I mean, this isn't one of those things where in the timeline we don't really know. This is a thing that, like, we don't know.
And it feels like there was supposed to be like a scene where he gathers them together or something like that. But we don't see that.
He gives like that rousing speech, like Friday Night Lights.
Yeah, exactly. Or he's the one that like forges the alliance that brings, that, you know, bridges the divide or something like that. But we don't see that. To the best of my knowledge, they kind of get their shit together and that's Hattori. He's the one that's sort of put that alliance together by this point. So, yeah, I know.
That guy.
So, anyway, so Junzo gets these orders, and he goes around messing up temples. As you do. And there are a bunch of temples that get the shit kicked out of them here. This draws the Brotherhood, which has to this point apparently been more or less staying out of the fight, which is such a dumb trope, but your empire is burning down around you, but you're just going to be like, no, nah, we're good. We're going to wait this one out.
I don't have time to get into that.
Yeah.
A non-stance is a stance.
Yeah. So they come out of the fight and begin defending their temples and getting involved in this fight. Most of this nonsense, I want to clarify, is from your favorite RPG supplement and mine, the source of all pain,
Time of the Void.
I'm going to... So I bought my copy of Time of the Void off DriveThruRPG. When I'm done with this section, I'm going to buy a copy off eBay and I'm going to light it on fire. So most of this nonsense, as we said, is from Time of the Void and is in the form of hooks for players to go and try and save these temples from being destroyed. So that should inform why a lot of these battles are fucking stupid. Because
are you saying that the card game is better than the RPG?
No, I'm saying it's all
it
dumb.
It sounds like that's what you're saying.
But these are all of these battles I'm about to tell you about are designed as...
encounters.
Encounters, yeah. Which is why they're a little bit derpy. he sacks Shiro Shiba on his way to Kyudenisawa in a battle called the Battle of Phoenix's Flight. In the Battle of Blackened Ground, he sacks Kyudenisawa in the search for Black Scrolls.
You're too late.
Too late.
Actually, I don't know if he is or not. I don't know exactly when all of this happens. But.
And then there's that's the Battle of Asawa Palace. There's also the Battle of Asawa Palace. He really fucks up the...
Yeah, he's really got it out Phoenix. For the Phoenix. But that's probably because they have all of his scrolls.
Yep. He also encountered the unicorn at the Battle of Iuchi Temple and got the shit kicked out of him by the Otaku Battle Maidens. This was before they got renamed.
I can't wait till we get to that.
Yeah, that's a fun little factoid. He sends one of his lieutenants, a buddy named Kuni Wazinu, which is such an L5R name.
Yeah, it really is.
To the four temples at Kyuden Seppen, which is supposed to be the most magnificent temple in all of Rokugan, which the Seppen fail to save. Wazinu opens a black scroll at the temple and destroys it, just wipes it out.
And this one we did talk about previously a little bit about how...
When we talked about the black scrolls, yeah.
Yeah, when we were talking about like whether people knew what they did. That he was... explicitly given this one to fuck up this temple.
Yeah. However, there's an additional fun little factoid that happens in the course of Yogo Junzo's Reign of Terror, tomping around trying to find the descendant of Shinsei, and that is the epic tale of Gazuk, the Bakemono monk, which I can only but attribute to Fred.
Dear L5R, just when I think... you can't get any worse or confuse me even more. You find a way.
Yeah. This is, unsurprisingly, from Time of the Void. And I'm just going to tell you all about our buddy Gazuk, the Bakemono monk. Bakemono are goblins. They're just straight up goblins. And according to this is an adventure hook that you can participate in, wherein the Hooded Ronin is captured. And you...
That's right. The guy that's supposed to save the day
is captured. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you have to get involved in the hook for the adventure is you help free him. And one of the NPCs that helps you free him is a Bakemono, an unarmed Bakemono that quotes passages of the Tao and begs for mercy. Any attempt at killing him, like, brings down the crow of Shinsei that defends Gazuk.
The whole thing is just like...
No, and it turns
why?
Out... It turns out that this Bakemono is not... Is he enlightened? I don't remember. He's turned to the path of enlightenment, basically. This Bakemono, while helping capture the Hooded Ronin, has been turned to the path of enlightenment by him. and becomes a monk. And after you free the Hooded Ronin from the clutches of Yogo Junzo's Oni captors, leaves with the Hooded Ronin as his monk disciple. There is no possible way this did not start because
as
somebody's
a joke, right?
No, there is no possible way that this did not start because Fred played a goblin monk in his D&D campaign at home.
Oh, fucking Fred.
There's just...
Yeah, I mean, you're right, and it hurts.
Because I'm imagining somebody at the table being like, man, these monks are taking off. Everybody loves the monks. We got to do more with the monks. And they're like writing out Time of the Void. And Fred at the end of the table, he's got his feet up. He's got a beer in one hand. He's like, yeah, I play a monk in my D&D game. And the whole table's quiet. That's genius. What is his name? And he just burps. Just rips a big old belch. And someone, Gazik? That's fantastic, Fred. And Fred's already like half passed out, falls off the table. What? Yeah. Uh-huh. It is genius. I'm great.
It's a goblin.
Goblin monk. Uh-huh. Like, I'm sorry. I can't with this. It's
I don't have any words. I want to be snarky about this, and I fucking can't. This broke me. I can't.
It's the kind of L5R thing. It's the kind of thing that, like, I want to hate it, but I can't because there's so much like this in L5R. This one's particularly bad, but there's a lot worse. Like, if this one hurts, like, buckle up because it's going to get, oh boy.
Maybe I've had like a really long day, but I'm having like a very visceral emotional response to this that I just like, I'm just so done.
There's way worse.
Why are they like this?
See, the problem is we have imagined this coke-addled alcoholic, possibly malevolent, demonic figure, Fred, who exists to produce bad ideas and torment us 20 years plus later. But the truth of the matter is...
There was a whole army of Freds.
Well, no. The truth of the matter is, it's easy to ascribe malice when the truth is accident. Like, a lot of the times, I don't think they were aiming to be terrible. They just kind of got there by accident. Whereas later on, further down the line in the game, when the player vote started happening, it was malice. Like, people intentionally picked the dumbest thing they could pick, like the crab elephant. Like, there's an actual elephant in the crab armies later on, for no apparent reason.
Oh, I know.
Like, and there's a lot of real dumb storyline choices in our future that you're going to have to make your peace with. And you're going to look back on the days of an enlightened monk, an enlightened goblin, and think, oh, sweet summer child. Would that I could go back and that be the most ridiculous thing that I had to reconcile in my heart.
I mean, and I think that's the thing, is that we're still in that phase of throwing things at the wall and seeing what sticks and deciding. I mean, we're still deciding what the tone of this game even is. Like, what are the themes? What are we trying to accomplish here? Yeah. And so you do get some weird stuff because you're like, I don't even know. We're not sure what we're trying to do, so we're just going to kind of feel it out.
They haven't even introduced Rattlings yet. That's a whole world of bullshit that hasn't started.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Wait till you have to read a whole fiction in the Rattling, like, patois or whatever you want to call it. Are you familiar with the way they write Rattling speak?
Yes.
That's fun, huh?
Fun.
I haven't read any of the RPG supplements with the Rattlings in them. I don't know if they use, I wasn't sure if they use it heavily in the RPG supplements.
I think that probably like in, you know, like specific quotations and stuff, yeah. But not, I mean, the majority of RPG supplements are mechanics and like background story, not necessarily quoted speech.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Oh, God. I mean, yeah, so the takeaway from that is,
Yeah, to bring the, to wrap this one back around.
I don't even know.
Yogo Junzo is burning down a lot of temples looking for the Hooded Ronin. He briefly gets him, but thanks to a fucking Bakemono monk, he gets away. But he still burns down a lot of temples, which is apparently a bummer. Yeah, and apparently monks are important.
Yeah, suddenly we remember, oh hey, what about those guys?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about Ishikawa now?
Yeah, I do.
Your dude that you love and you got mad at me for...
I just think... Okay.
Saying mean things about him? I wasn't mean.
You weren't
He mean. Does trip into scenes.
He doesn't trip into scenes. He's in the background of many scenes. I'll grant you that. So who is Ishikawa? We will give a quick refresher on Ishikawa. Ishikawa is an Imperial Guardsman. I feel like I've talked about Ishikawa before.
Maybe you've talked not. About him. So we've talked about him when we talked about the Kolot.
Okay.
And we also mentioned him very briefly in our first episode when I asked, how the fuck did nobody know that Hante had a child?
Yeah.
And we talked about Ishikawa.
Gotcha. So Seppin Ishikawa is an Imperial Guardsman. He's a very good boy. He's super good at his job. Like, notoriously good at his job, apparently.
Which is, like, one of the only people in this game who's noted, like, notorious for something decent.
Yeah. There's a fiction called 3 Days where we get a crane. A courtier sees him and refers to him as the Emperor's most famous guardsman and a bastion of honor. In reference to saving Satori and Keide during the coup. The wiki says he harbors a never-disclosed love for Keide, but I can't find a source for that, so I don't know.
Huh.
Anyway, so he's a very, very good boy. He is, we talk about him being in the background of stuff. He's at the Battle of Kyuden Kakita, and Kachigo sends him to Kyuden Kakita to die because he's getting nosy, and he doesn't die. He acquits himself famously and gets more famous and more well-known. So she sends him to the Battle of Baden Pass to die again, and he, again, does not die. She sends him orders to do something else stupid. I'll be honest with you, I kind of forget what it was. And before he even can get the orders, he sends his resignation back to Kachiko, saying, I quit. You're dumb. I quit. And his entire troop of Imperial Guardsmen quits with him.
That's loyalty right there.
Yeah. And his mission becomes finding out what's up with... He's trying to prove that Kachiko is, like, behind things, basically. But in the course of doing that, he swears fealty to the Crane, which goes down super good with Kachiko. And in the course of doing that, he stumbles, and this is where he really does stumble. He literally accidentally uncovers the Kolot. And that is where they, rather than, in order to get him off their trail, they plant a bit of the Fulang prophecy in front of his nose. So he will go back to the Imperial Palace and get off their case.
To make nice with Kachiko, which is another, like, storyline plot point thing that I have a problem with of, like...
Yeah.
Just kidding, you thought she was terrible, but actually she's not. Go be friends with her because everyone loves Kachiko.
Yeah. What they end up giving him is the prophecy about the last Hantai and all that stuff. So... The one that basically says Satori is Fulang. I really like Ishikawa, but his whole plot line is really goofy. He reads very much like somebody's OC, like somebody's home campaign character that they played in the background of the official storyline the whole time. And then wrote into the canon, like, along the way.
Which is definitely a thing that happens, like... And I love, the stories of people's OCs making it into the book.
Like, I can think of like 3 off the top of my head. So I wouldn't be surprised if Ishikawa was another one that just wasn't as well known.
He's a good boy. He's just doing his best.
Yeah. I don't have a reason for including him for a, like, he doesn't really further the plot. It's just pure flavor, but it's good. All the stories that are about Ishikawa are good. They're reasonably well written, and they're, like, good L5R. They're a little bit of samurai drama, a little bit of magic, like, there's fun stuff going on here, and this is the kind of, like, the good L5R stuff that we'll get a lot more of later down the road, where they're adding a lot of good, like, texture to Rokugan and fleshing out these side characters. You'll see a lot of this further down the road, where you'll get like a 3 or 4 story arc about one of these characters that aren't really like the main characters. This becomes kind of a repeating thing that L5R will do down the years, which I really, really like.
And this is a thing that we talked about when we first started outlining for this arc too, is that, you know, you kept coming back and saying, I don't know how we talk about Ishikawa because he's not really like central to the plot, but there's so much stuff about him in here. And then ultimately, the decision that we came to was like, well, we have to talk about him because at some point somebody thought he was important, even if by the end, like, he doesn't really do anything necessarily like central to the plot. Somebody clearly thought that he was important enough to have like 6 fictions about him.
Yeah. And I think ultimately we're reading everything. And if somebody wrote a bunch about him, that makes him important because the people who are playing the game read all those fictions about him. And We're kind of telling the story of the game as we go, not just the story of the story. So
right, yeah. I mean, and that's a thing I think that took us a little bit to kind of figure out exactly where we landed on all of that, because we have this hindsight that they didn't have when they're writing this.
Yeah,
like they had no clue that he wasn't going to really go anywhere.
Yeah,
maybe they did. I don't know, but yeah, he's an interesting background character who's got like a lot of stuff going on, but not really that important, but also pretty important. I don't know.
Yeah.
Who knows what's up with him? We get a lot of that, I feel like, in this episode. It's like a lot of like stuff that should be important, but wasn't important, but was also maybe kind of important.
Yep.
That's what I'm going to call this episode.
Yep. Agree.
So, the next section. We don't really have anything to say about this. We went back and forth about whether we were going to even talk about this or take it out. And I have titled this section, Totori Forgives the Crabs for Being Villains. We never forgive him for being boring.
Yeah. Thank you, Time of the Void, for giving us a red herring in our outlining process.
Man, this threw us for a loop. We spent so much time looking for any other reference to this.
Yeah. The wiki has this reference to, like, Totori and the lion and the crab establish an alliance. And it turns out, no, they don't. There is this one dumb quote in Time of the Void. And that's it. It's just this one dumb quote. And that's it.
Yeah. Leaving the Crane to organize themselves, Totori leads his army back toward Baden Pass and the rest of his Ronin. Many of the dragon samurai who stood with Totori have returned to their homelands at the command of their champion. What is left, however, is a fearsome army of battle-hardened Ronin and loyal clan samurai. After a visit from the mysterious hooded Ronin, hey, there's that guy again, Totori's commands become ever more sharp and sure. He sends messengers to Takuan, instructing him to bring his troops to meet the main Ronin army in the Lionlands near the strategically significant Baden Pass. At Baden Pass, the wolf will await an army of crab once more, this time as an ally. I like that there's one sentence there. This time as an ally.
Yeah. This is why we don't trust the wiki, because from that one phrase, the wolf will wait an army of crab once more, this time as an ally, there is an entire like bullet point about the lion and the crab forging an alliance in 1128 or something like that. So yeah, this is one of the dangers. This is why the wiki is like our last stop. We use it for timelines and stuff, but we try and use it as little as possible because of stuff like this. It can overinflate the importance of trivial shit like this one line. So
yeah, but we wanted to put that in there because apparently at some point Crab and Lion were friends.
Briefly
somehow, I guess. But speaking of clans and friendship, remember the mantis?
No.
Yeah, exactly. Our good pal Yoritomo is still around, I guess. He is still wheeling and dealing. Yoritomo is like the used car salesman of Rokugan.
He really is.
That's what I've decided.
Yeah. No, he's been kind of flexing a little bit here in the days leading up to the Day of Thunder. There's a bunch of stuff in Time of the Void about him getting his clan, showing his clan's muscle, basically. There's a single card from this time that shows it, but it's mostly in Time of the Void. There's a whole bunch of quotes about the various Mantis factions working together. And that seems to be sort of the point that is most important here, is the Minor Clan Alliance is learning to work together as a major faction. And that's the important part. The Wasp, the Centipede, the Mantis are learning that they can function together as a single unit. They're kicking the Shadowlands' ass all up and down Rokugan. In a number of battles, they defeat Yogo Junzo's forces decisively. And Yoritomo is learning his strength. And what will end up happening is, and we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit here, but we're gonna do it. There's two contradictory sources of when exactly this happens and exactly how this goes down. But Imperial Herald says that rather than attack the other clans, the Mantis would instead sail away to find a new home, because why make sense? Why not just be contradictory? But every other source is consistent in that Yoritomo, on the eve of the Day of Thunder, offers his head to the champions of the other clans, but then says his forces will attack the armies of the other great clans, basically weakening them on the eve of this giant battle, making them too weak to succeed, unless his clan is granted great clan status. Yakumo, being the jagass that he is, thinks this is hilarious. But the end result is that this is how the Mantis achieve great clan status, by holding a sword to the neck of the collective great clans and the entire empire.
Yeah, I mean, he just like kind of blackmails them into being a great clan. He's like, hey, you're trying to stop the end of the world. Well, let me tell you how that's going to go down.
Yeah.
Which is like a colossally huge dick move. Like, that's just like, he is an asshole.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, you know what? I get that you're trying to stop the apocalypse and everything, but here's how you can help me. I mean, what would he do? I guess, what would he have done if they had been like, no, thank you?
He would have attacked them. That's the whole thing with Yoritomo, is he's depicted as being like monomaniacally focused on this one goal. And he absolutely would have knelt there and let them kill him while his followers attacked the clans and died and crippled them.
And the world ended.
Yeah, ostensibly.
Okay. He's just... okay. I hate him. I hate him so much.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. That's really... yeah. Yeah, he's... I mean, he's really, like, not... he's doing his own thing. That's the part that I keep coming back to, is that there's all this stuff going on, and Yoritomo is there, but he is not participating in what the rest of the class is up to.
Yeah, but he's starting to be included. And I think that's what
one of the things we're seeing. Included, but he's not doing anything related to, like, he's not helping.
Well, that's what I think what we're seeing, though, is we're seeing that his clan is becoming capable of that. The minor clans are beginning to work together and being able to work on that level. And then at the Winter Court that they hold, he's included with the other champions for the first time.
Yeah. Not because he deserves it, because I hate him.
But. Yeah. I am not Muscle Tomo's favorite, biggest fan either. But I think that's what the point of these little vignettes is showing, is that in this time of war, he's demonstrating that his clan, his alliance, can play with the big boys. So they're sort of treating him like it. And so when he gets the chance, he sort of puts the knife up there, and they are forced to acknowledge his strength And that's where he gets away with it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a bold move and, like, clearly it works.
Mm-hmm. But
I don't have to like him.
No. No, I don't either.
So we are right on the doorstep.
Yeah.
We are. We've got a mysterious hooded Ronin going around and maybe gathering people up.
Who knows what he's doing?
I don't know. We've got Yoko Jinzo taking orders from Fu Lang to try and kill people, we think, maybe. We've got the crab and the lion maybe making an alliance. Maybe we're starting to realize that we can't fight each other. Maybe.
Yeah. And we've got the mantis holding a knife to the throats of the entire empire. And hopefully they're going to help out or something. We'll
at
see.
At least not hurt things.
Yeah. We'll see next episode what they do with their great clan status. But in the meantime, they're willing to put the entirety of the empire on the chopping block in order to get it.
Yeah, which is like, God, I can't even get past that. But also, there's goblin monks. So
yeah,
if you take away nothing else from this episode, goblin monks.
Goblin monks.
Garbage of the Five Rings is an independent production and can be found online at www.garbageofthefiverings.com and on Twitter at G5RPodcast. I'm one of your hosts, Amelia Antrim, and I can be found on Twitter at Ginger Reckoning. My co-host, Jude Vase, can be found on Twitter at Aramidic Jude. Sources for this episode and further information on the topics discussed can be found in the show notes. Thanks for letting us waste your time. We'll be back in 2 weeks.